ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, today is most of one of those nice days. It's a Friday and we are also just suminaring our strength. Putting together our courage. Maybe next week I'm going to go live. But for now, my phone is out of commission. Vati, I need like a 2-point verification. What? And I'm like, hey. Goodbye, Facebook. Anytime something gets difficult, oh, goodbye. Ooh, I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm out of here. Goodbye. Alrighty. So, ladies and gentlemen, do you think that there is such thing as an over-perfectionist? Is there a thing called over-perfectionist? Well, tonight we're talking about perfectionists. We're talking about perfectionism. We're talking about being a perfectionist. We're talking about those people that like things to be perfect. Those people that like things to be done a specific way, a specific time, a specific algorithm, a specific country, a specific, they like specifics, they pay attention to detail and it must be just the way it is. Now, we have learned most now from, oh Mike, Tata Mike, Kucha, perfectionism is somewhat, it's somewhat not too healthy because it might drive you crazy. It might drive you crazy, Mara. Now I want to go on to the other side. Is there a thing called healthy perfectionism? Is there something that we can do to maybe make us like, woo, yes, I'm a healthy perfectionist. I am very healthy in this. And you know how we do on our Fridays. Our Fridays, we do tech talks. So we listen and we come and dilute what we have heard, right? So ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned. And we as Eagle FM do not take ownership of anything. We don't take ownership as we are just using this for illustration purposes. We are using this for educational purposes. We are using this because vele, you guys don't want to come share your experiences. Now I have to go and find people. Now I have to sift through all these thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of conversations. Hey! Mara, nonetheless, we are having a good time. It's Friday. And the number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio in case you would like to call me, in case you would like to come and tell me about your perfections or your imperfections. I have my own imperfections. I have Muscats in the sir to hide. Oh, I haven't played that song in such a long time. I even forgot the words. But it used to be my theme song for like 2 years. Imagine, is it 2 years or 1 year? I don't know. You know, ever since then, Toshiri, I'm just not a perfectionist the way I like anymore. I just feel like I'm missing out, man. I'm missing out on order. I'm missing out on, you know, concrete things. Oh. Mara, we are going to also call them and then we are going to talk to them tonight. Whether they are at the club, they must answer our calls.
So a few months ago, I picked up my older daughter, who's a junior at a local NESCAC school, and I was driving her to a family event. And she spent almost the entire car ride complaining about one of the classes she was taking. She found it to be very difficult. She felt really stupid. And she just really perseverated at how hard time she was having. And I'm listening to her because I'm a good mother. I'm supposed to listen when my kids are unhappy. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, here I have a kid who's at a really good school. She's thriving academically. She has had the same boyfriend for over 3 years, a guy that we actually really like. She's the president of her club soccer team. She's got a lot of friends. She's 5'8". She's blonde. She's blue-eyed. She's thin. She's just like me. And yet, her whole persona was focused on the one thing in her life that wasn't going well. And it reminded me of a patient I saw a few years ago, a woman maybe in her 40s, who married, happily married, to a man who had a very good job, and so she could choose to be a stay-at-home mom. She had, I think, 3 teenagers who were all thriving. She volunteered in the kids' school. She volunteered in the church. She had lots of friends. She was very fit. She was a runner. She drank alcohol socially. And as I'm listening to her, I'm thinking, okay, there was never a course in graduate school about what do you do if you're envious of one of your patients? because she, in fact, sounded like she had a really good life. And so finally, you know, I'm taking her whole biopsychosocial history, and I said, so I'm a psychologist. I teach stress management. Why are you here? And she says, because every time I open a drawer or I see clutter, I feel like a failure. And that started my interest in perfectionism. And why is it that we do tend to zero in on the one or two things in our life that's wrong, rather than embracing the things in our life that's right? And I worry most about women. I'm female, I have two daughters, I have a sister. I mostly treat women. And the fact is, the research shows that on average, men worry about three things every day, while women on average worry about 12 things every day. And so if you're a perfectionist, if you're a woman, you're probably more likely to be stressed. So is there such thing as healthy perfectionism? In fact, there is. It's called adaptive perfectionism. And in fact, you can be a healthy perfectionist. You can thrive at doing some things very well. So you can be a superb soccer player. You can be a superb math student. You can be a really good friend. There are all sorts of ways to be an adaptive perfectionist, that when you do something well, you're happy, but you also know how to dial down, that you realize that you don't have to be perfect in every aspect of your life. Which comes us to the maladaptive perfectionist, who's somebody who can't do that. And in fact, every time a maladaptive perfectionist does something well, next time they have to do it even better. So a 95 on a physics exam is good, but next time you have to get a 97. You score two goals during a soccer game, next time you have to score four. And maladaptive perfectionists actually don't do so well. Their GPA is lower than adaptive perfectionists. Their alcohol and drug abuse is higher, and they have a very high risk of depression. It's hard not to be a perfectionist. I'm a psychologist. I fight this myself every day. And I remember a number of years ago, I live in a town, a suburb of Boston, and most women in my town don't work. They're stay-at-home moms. And so it's lonely if you're a working mom. And so a number of years ago, I joined a bunco group. I don't know if you know what a bunco group is, but it's literally you roll dice. It's like Yahtzee. And you can actually drink a fair amount of wine, and it doesn't matter because you don't need any talent or skill or insight to do well at bunco. So I joined bunco, and the way it works is they assign 12 women together, and you meet at each person's house once a month. And I was assigned December, which is really unfair. But anyway, so the first month, I went to bunco, had a nice time, but I noticed that the woman's house was perfect. There was furniture in every room. There were pictures on the walls. The, you know, drapes matched the furniture. The house looked beautiful. And I started to get anxious. Second month, I went, same thing. The house was beautiful. Everything was perfect. The, you know, the woman was clearly impeccable at home. And I complained to my next door neighbor who also works outside the home. And I said, I'm getting really nervous. You know, we painted 7 years ago when I don't think we've put the pictures back up yet. And she reassured me and she said, you know, doesn't matter. People are creative in different ways. In some women, it's really important to have their house look just so. And Allie, your talents lie somewhere else. Anyway, but I got more and more nervous. And as December got closer and closer, I got more anxious. All my inner perfectionism, and I think I took 2 days off from work to vacuum, and I really wanted my house to look just so. And time came, opened the door, women walked in, and a woman walked into my front hall and looked up and said, I can't believe you have white walls. And for the next 2.5 hours, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I have white walls. You know, I didn't know you're not supposed to have white walls. But after about 2.5 hours, I thought, wait a minute. What a witch. Who walks into your house and criticizes the color of your walls? And I could feel all my inner perfectionism crumbling, and I realized it really didn't matter what color walls my house had. And so I quit bunco, and I still, to this day, hang out with the same women every month. We call it Girls Night Out. We drink wine, we talk about our feelings, and we don't care about what color walls we have. And so you can let go of perfectionistic tendencies. But what are the triggers for perfectionism? Body image, number one. Body image is such a big deal, and it's very scary to me. I'm a psychologist. I was trained, you look out for depression, look out for suicidality. Those are the things you worry about as a psychologist. Not so. Anorexia is actually the most lethal of all psychiatric disorders. And in fact, anorexia kills 12 times more adolescent girls than other diseases. 41% of first graders are afraid of getting fat. 82% of fourth grade girls wish they were thinner. The BMI of Miss America, when the pageant started, was 22. The BMI now is 16.9. A woman with a BMI of 16.9 probably can't get pregnant because she's so thin. So body image, eating disorders, they're very scary. In one five-year period in this country, the prevalence of bulimia went up fivefold. Perfection is an issue. The average model in this country is 5'11 and weighs 117 pounds. The average woman in this country is 5'4 and weighs 140 pounds. Which means no matter what we do, no matter how perfectionistic we are never going to look like a model. What are the triggers? Grades. You know, is the A good enough? Is the A plus good enough? I had a patient once who was in grad school, and she was working part-time, and she was really pushing herself to do well in school, but she didn't have the time to do the quality of work that she wanted because she was also working. And she kept on getting A's, and she couldn't figure out why she was getting A's when she actually thought her work was really subpar. Until one day her professor had all the students combine or do peer editing of their papers, and so she read her classmates' papers, and she realized why she was getting A's. And yet, she continued to do well, but at least she realized that her perfectionism was driving her to far exceed her professor's expectations of what a student needed to do. Social goals. Social media. I have a 15-year-old who spends half her life looking at Snapchat and Instagram. Most of my patients look at Facebook. And the problem is people don't post bad things. People don't post unflattering pictures of themselves. I see a lot of pregnant women in my practice, and they say, all you see on Facebook is these blissful pregnant women. I'm like, yeah, people are not going to post pictures of themselves vomiting. People only post good stuff. But what they also post is parties and social events that you may not get invited to, and it causes hurt feelings, and it really affects our feeling of inclusion. Athletic goals. I had a patient a couple years ago who was a student at a different NESCAC school. She had been recruited to that school to play a sport, and she came to see me because she was so stressed out that her performance in that sport wasn't enough for her, and she also realized that she couldn't experience college life. She wasn't able to attend the classes. She wasn't able to go to social events. She wasn't able to drink. She wasn't able to do anything because she was pushing herself so hard to excel at that sport. And she ended up leaving college simply because of that. Finally, family issues. It's so easy to look at other people and think that they come from a perfect family. And again, that's what we see on social media. I can tell you, I'm a psychologist. What's really good, if you're a psychologist, you're nosy, you hear about these things, you see patients who seem to have these perfect families. There's no such thing. There's alcoholism. There's abuse. There's infidelity. There's gambling. There was a family in our town that I truly thought was the perfect family. I didn't know them well, but I knew them enough. I saw them socially. Both parents had big jobs. They made a lot of money, and they went on beautiful trips. Both parents were very physically attractive. They had three kids who were all extremely attractive, all very athletic, all very intelligent, all extremely popular. And so everyone's image, I remember actually once being at a party, and when this family walked in, everyone sort of deflated because, like, the perfect family was there and no one else was going to look good in comparison. Well, around that time, I was writing a book on perfectionism, and I sent out a notice saying I need people to be interviewed for my book. I wasn't doing the interviewing, my writer was, and so I could keep confidentiality. So fast forward about a year, and I was reading the galleys of my book, and I read a story, and it was this woman who said, I know in my town I have this image that we are the perfect family. She says, but I'm not in love with my husband anymore, and I intend to leave him as soon as my last kid graduates from high school. And my older son is addicted to marijuana, and one of my other kids was just arrested for shoplifting. So we're not perfect. So be careful about what you see. Be careful how you judge people, because in fact, people may not be as perfect as they look. So what can you do about perfectionism? One, are physical strategies. Believe it or not, exercise is an incredibly effective way to treat anxiety and depression, which feed into perfectionism. So when you're feeling badly about yourself because you're not perfect, go for a walk, go for a run, go for a swim, go for a walk with a friend. Exercise is very powerful. Study just came out, in fact, showing that meditation specifically reduces the symptoms of maladaptive perfectionism. So download an app, meditate, do some form of relaxation, and it really will help your degree of perfectionism. When we talk about body image, you know, there's this issue in America now, people are embarrassed to eat. So we teach our patients, this is what's called the 80-20 plan. So if 80% of what you eat is the good stuff, you know, the whole grains, the fruits, the vegetables, the nuts, the berries, the good stuff, the other 20% can be what you want. Because what my patients do is they don't eat anything sweet for 5 days, and then they eat a bag of cookies. And it's a whole lot better for you to have a cookie a couple times a day and make that your 20% than to do it every 5 days. Cognitive strategies. What can you do? How can you think in a different way? You are your own worst enemy. Nobody is as mean to you as your own mind. Just once, write down everything you think about yourself and see how nice it is. Because we're not. When we get up and we look in the mirror, we criticize ourselves. We put ourselves down. I remember when I was a kid, my father used to say that I was lazy. And I probably spent most of my adult life trying to get that voice out of my head. Think about the voices you hear in your head. Those are the ones that we need to reach out. One of my patients asked me last year, is it a good thing or a bad thing to compare yourself to other people? And my answer was, it's a great thing to compare down. Comparing yourself to other people who aren't doing as well as you is really good for you. But that's not what we do. We always compare up. We look at people who are smarter than us. We compare ourselves to people who are thinner than us, who have happier families than us, who have more money than us, who travel more than we do, who have more friends than we do. But do me a favor. Start comparing down. Because if you compare down, you'll be healthier. Gratitude. There's been a ton of research on gratitude. There's actually a textbook on gratitude. Simply acknowledging the good things in your life. And the research shows if you get a notebook and put it by your bed and at night, right before you go to bed, just write down a few things in your life you're grateful for. Your whole outlook will improve. You'll be less depressed. You'll be less anxious. It's really stunning. Recognize hidden issues. There's no such thing as a perfect person. I can tell you this. I see people who are considered to be perfect people as patients. That's a lot of P's. There's no such thing as a perfect person. Everybody has issues. They just show it in different ways. People hide their issues in different ways. But everybody has issues. So a number of years ago, I was traveling with a group doing these big women's health conferences. And, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 women would come to each conference. And these women were of all shapes and sizes, all races, all identities. They were, you know, big cities and small cities. And one of the things that was happening was there was one of the sponsors was doing a sort of a beautification, a campaign for real beauty. They wanted women to recognize their beauty, not in a traditional way. And so what they did amongst the whole exhibit hall was they had these huge mirrors. And attached to each mirror was a pen, a Sharpie, and then there was a little sign on each mirror. And it said, look at your reflection and write down something beautiful that you see. And at the end of each day, I would walk around and look at what was written on these mirrors. And it was amazing. And remember, the women who came were not rich. They were not beautiful. These were typical American women of all shapes and sizes, all races, all everything. And I would walk around and it would be, I have beautiful eyes. I have gorgeous hair. I love my curves. I have such a strong spirit. I am so resilient. I'm such a good friend. I'm a wonderful mother. I'm a great daughter. So do me a favor. The next time you look in a mirror, think of something beautiful about yourself. Thank you.
My name is Stephen Campolo, and I am a recovering food addict. And it is this food addiction that led to an eating disorder that almost killed me. About 5 years ago, I woke up in excruciating pain at about 4 in the morning. I want you to imagine the worst stomach ache you've ever had in your life, combined with the feeling of pins and needles just sticking you in the abdomen. I thought I was dying. Really, really scared. So I jumped in my car, and I drove myself to the hospital. As soon as I got there, they took me back and ran some tests. An ultrasound had revealed that my gallbladder was about to rupture. So they scheduled emergency surgery, and my gallbladder was removed. I'll never forget when the surgeon walked into my hospital room, just as I was still waking up from the anesthesia, and he looked at me and he goes, "Mr. Campolo, I don't think you realize how lucky you are. If you would have waited just 1 or 2 more hours to come to the hospital, your gallbladder would have ruptured and you would be dead." Talk about a life-changing moment. Now, what had led to this gallbladder attack happening was the night before, I had binged on an entire jar of peanut butter, and it was just way too much for my body to handle, and it was the last straw, hence me having a gallbladder attack. Now, ultimately, what had led me to this point in my life was an all-or-nothing mentality I had developed when I started my fitness journey years ago. I believed that in order to be successful on my journey, I had to be disciplined, and that being disciplined meant being perfect. But the truth is, discipline has nothing to do with being perfect. Discipline has to do with being consistent. I was the type of guy where if I felt like I messed up and had one little cookie, then I had to eat the entire package of cookies. This is like getting one flat tire and then deciding, you know what? I think I'm going to go slash my other 3 tires. Doesn't really make much sense, right? But it was this all or nothing mentality that had gotten me to this point. Now, I have to take you way back. So I grew up on Long Island, New York, in an Italian home. For those of you who know Italians, we like to eat. And it's this love affair with food that led me to gain close to 100 pounds during my childhood years. I'm the oldest of 4 kids, but I was the only kid that had a weight problem. So I knew from a very early age, my relationship with food was very, very different from the other people. I remember going to kids' birthday parties and wondering, is there going to be enough pizza for seconds or thirds? Am I going to be able to go sneak off and get another brownie? I just always found a lot of pleasure in food from a very, very early age. Now, as I approached 14 years old, I decided, okay, it's time. I don't want to be the fat guy anymore. I was going through some hormonal changes, going through puberty, and it was time to make a change. I was tired of getting picked on, tired of getting bullied, tired of seeing all my friends go on dates with the pretty girls, so it was time to make a change. Now, this was back in 2003, so there was no YouTube, there was no social media. If Google was around, I didn't know it existed, so there was really no reliable source to get information from. So I decided to do what I had always seen in the Rocky movies. Whenever Rocky was getting ready for a fight, he would run. So I said, you know what? That's a great idea. I'm going to start running. And that's exactly what I did. Every single day, I would go for my run. I would put on my Rocky soundtrack. I would play Eye of the Tiger on repeat. And just like Forrest Gump, I was running. Along with running every single day, I put myself on a very restrictive diet consisting of chicken and broccoli because I figured, well, how could anyone go wrong with chicken and broccoli? But it was this restrictive way of eating that was actually going to harm me down the road. Now, this plan did work in the short term. I lost about 50 pounds within the first 3 months, and over the coming year, I was down about 100 pounds. So I was really, really happy with that. Now, what most people do when they want to lose weight and start a fitness plan is they restrict their food greatly, but then they want to exercise more, okay? That's equivalent to putting less fuel in your car, but then wanting to drive it more. Well, it's only going to be a matter of time before your car breaks down, right? And that's exactly what I was doing to my own body. I was exercising a lot, but I wasn't giving my body enough food, and my cravings were going through the roof, my hunger hormones were going wild, and it just wasn't very sustainable. The ironic thing is that my binge eating disorder didn't start until I began my weight loss journey. You see, when I was younger, I just loved to eat. So I ate, but I didn't classify foods as good or bad. The National Eating Disorder Association says that the strongest risk factors for binge eating is defined by something called perfectionism. And they say that perfectionism means setting the bar so high for yourself that the second you don't meet that standard, you feel like a failure and you want to self-sabotage. And this is exactly what I was doing. Monday through Friday, I was on my game. I was working out every day. I was doing my running. I was following my restrictive diet. But when the weekend would come, all bets were off. I would eat anything and everything. And typically by Sunday, what would happen is I would feel disgusted with myself, and I just wanted Monday to get here so I can get back on my diet again. This is called the Monday diet. Are any of you familiar with that? Little did I know I was going to be on this journey for the next 15 years. When I turned 15 years old, my family decided to move from New York down to Florida. And my dad got me a job at Gold's Gym. Now for me, I was in heaven, because at this point in my life, I had just lost about 100 pounds, so I had a lot of loose skin, and I looked like a melted candle. So I said, all right, I got to do something about this. Now I want to build some muscle like Arnold. I want to get strong. I want to become a macho man. So being at Gold's Gym was a great opportunity for me, because there were all these personal trainers and all these coaches. So now I could absorb all this information from them and learn how to build my body. And around this time, I met my first bodybuilding coach. And after working out with him a few times, we decided to get me ready for my first teenage bodybuilding show, which just happened to be 6 months away. So for 6 months, I was all in. I was following this very, very strict diet. I was doing my cardio. I was working out every single day. I had to be ready, because within 6 months, I was going to be standing on a stage just like this in nothing but my Speedo, practically half naked, in front of my friends, family, and hundreds of other strangers. So there was no margin for error. I was fully, fully committed. Leading up to the show, about a few weeks away, I found myself going on the McDonald's website and just staring at the burgers and staring at the fries and imagining holding this burger in my hands and taking a bite out of it. Mm-mm. I didn't even care about the show anymore. Oddly enough, as the show got closer, I just wanted it to be over so I can go back to enjoying all of my favorite foods. And as you can imagine, that's exactly what happened. As soon as the bodybuilding show was over, I binged, and I binged really, really hard. I gained about 30 pounds within the first month of the show being over. Now, I still didn't think I had a problem, because I just told myself, well, you know what, Stephen? You just dieted really hard for the show. You know, you depleted yourself. So your body needs these extra calories. It's okay to binge. It's okay to eat a lot more food. So I still didn't really think I had a problem. Years later, my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer and given just 1 year to live. This was something that was really hard on me and my family. And I really didn't know how to process it. So I had done what I always did. I turned to food for comfort and as a distraction. And while my mom was sick for the next year, I binged, and I binged a lot more frequently. I remember listening to a podcast one day, and on this podcast, they were interviewing a former addict. And when they asked him, you know, why did you continue to do the drugs and drink the alcohol when you knew that it was destroying your life? You lost your family, you were losing your career, you were losing relationships. Why did you continue to do it? And he gave one of the most honest answers I ever heard. He goes, you know, even though I knew what I was doing was wrong, I was just looking for that little bit of happiness and that little bit of joy that the high would give me. I was looking for that little bit of happiness at the bottom of a bottle. Even though I knew I was going to regret it, even though I knew that as soon as this was over, I was going to hate myself, I was willing to sacrifice that because I wanted that little bit of joy. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that's exactly how I feel about food. I know that when I binge, I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm fully aware of that. I know I'm going to hate myself just minutes after I eat all these cookies and raid the pantry. But I had fallen short so many times, and I had binged so many times, that I was familiar with the feeling of embarrassment and discomfort and shame and guilt. it really had become the devil that I knew. Unfortunately, my mother did end up passing away, and the binging continued. At this point in my life, I knew that I had a problem, and I had to get a hold of it. Especially having just lost my mom, she was only 52, and 52 years old is way, way too young. And I knew what I was doing to my own health wasn't good. On the outside, I looked fit because I was still following a very restrictive diet, and I was still working out almost every day, but I was still binging. And when I would binge, it would hurt. I knew I was hurting my health. My kidneys would hurt. My gallbladder would hurt, which ultimately had to be removed. It had come down to this all-or-nothing mentality that I had developed. I believed that in order to be perfect, I had to do everything right. And that's actually what stops people from making progress. We call this the paradox of perfection. We think that we have to be perfect with everything we do. But the truth is, perfection is just an illusion. It's something that doesn't even exist, but so many of us strive to achieve this standard of perfection. And I was the one putting all of this pressure on myself. At this point in my life, I had tried a lot of things. I met with therapists and eating disorder counselors, and I knew people that had success with those things, but it didn't work for me. I bought all of the books you can imagine on binge eating and eating disorders, but nothing really seemed to click. And then one day, I just thought to myself, why don't I just change my relationship with food? I'm the one putting all this pressure on myself to be perfect, but again, perfection is something that doesn't even exist. It's just an illusion. We've been taught our entire life that you can't have your cake and eat it too. Well, I am here to tell you that you can, and you should, and that's actually how you get the best results. So today, I want to share a few ways with you that you can move from the idea of trying to be perfect and get on a path to start making more consistent progress. First, you want to set a realistic time frame for yourself. As a full-time fat loss coach, I have hundreds of conversations with people every single year. And my favorite question to ask them is, how long did it take you to gain all this weight? How long did it take you to gain 100 pounds or 50 pounds? Did it happen overnight, or was it a period of years? And of course, their answer is, well, it happened over years, right? I always like to say, no one ever got in shape from having one good meal, and no one ever got fat from having one bad meal, right? It's usually a culmination of the things that we're doing consistently. But yet, people want to do these extreme things, and they want to lose the weight overnight, which isn't very realistic. So I always say, give yourself a realistic time frame. You didn't gain the weight overnight. You're not going to lose it overnight. So start setting long-term goals and take all that pressure off of yourself. Secondly, you want to embrace failure. When I first started my fitness journey years ago, I looked at failure as a death sentence. I thought that if I slipped up just a little bit and had a Hershey kiss or had a little piece of candy, that it was all over. I was a failure. I was ruined. But the truth is, failure is part of the process. And even when I begin working with a client today, I always tell them from the very beginning, listen, you're going to fall off track. You're going to fail. We're all human. It happens to all of us. And don't be surprised when it does, because it's going to happen. However, your success will be dictated upon recognizing that you messed up and then course correcting quickly. My most successful clients are the ones that acknowledge that they messed up a little bit. They get back on track. They forget it happened. And now they're moving on. Don't allow one little slip up to become two or three, and now a week or a month has gone by and you've self-sabotaged and you're back at square one. Embrace failure. It's part of the process. And third, you want to do less and not more. Having been involved in fitness now for close to 20 years, I see it all the time. When people want to start a fitness journey, what do? They want to do a million things at once. They want to go from 0 to 100 miles an hour. They want to cut sugar, cut the bread, cut carbs. They want to do yoga, run 10 miles a day, lift weights. They set the bar so high for themselves, And then by the second or third day, when they can no longer sustain this new lifestyle, they feel like a failure, and they're usually pulling into a McDonald's drive-thru, right? Because they set the bar so high for themselves. You don't have to do that. To be successful on your fitness journey, you just have to do a few things, but do it consistently over time. Get your steps in every day. Go for a walk. Work out 3 to 4 days a week. Follow a well-balanced diet. If you could do these things, but do it consistently, you're going to be way ahead of the game. Before I leave you today, I want you to identify an area of your life where maybe you've been trying to be perfect and setting the bar so high for yourself. And instead of trying to achieve this level of perfection, start aiming for consistent progress. Because it's the little things that we do every single day that create ripples in our life. And these ripples ultimately compound into tidal waves of progress months and years down the road. So stop trying to be perfect and start trying to be consistent. Because consistency always compounds. Thank you.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save and you save.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, on this lovely Friday, we're going to be talking about perfectionism. Now, the previous TED Talks that we've listened to basically spoke about perfectionism, and it also spoke about being a healthy perfectionist and also looking at setting the standards for ourselves. One of the few things that I do know about being a perfectionist is that you set the bar so high that no one could climb it, and not even yourself. And that is why many of us have fail in achieving the things that we want to achieve, because we aim too high, you know. And it's not a bad thing to aim too high. It is just does it mean that we are flying over the moon or we are flying to the sun, Icarus? Are we flying to the sun and burning our wings, or are we gradually getting to the sun with time? It is a matter of understanding our steps to the high goals that we set for ourselves, right? So it's not bad for you to say that, yo, I want to be president. It is nice that you want to be president. It's nice that you want to be president of the world. It's nice that you want to be an angel. It's nice that you want to be all these things that you set out for yourself. But it is in the how you get there that either breaks you or makes you, because the disappointment that you might have in yourself is enough to set you back 1,000 steps. And in these 1,000 steps, we are just trying to not get there. And that is why the Tate over there was talking about his clients, right? And telling them to set small goals. Because at the end of the day, when you talk about weight gain, for example, you don't gain that weight overnight. You don't go and binge eat today and then tomorrow you are stutla, 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 baby. You're not stutla tomorrow. You still have your same body, you still have everything is perfectly fine, except your morale, except your heart, except where your thoughts are at, right? So it takes time for us to get to the places that we want to get, and it is just human nature for us to say that, hey, human being, hey, person out there, is it possible for us to do this together and to do it slowly? So now we are going to dive into the definition of a perfectionism. How will we know if we are perfectionists, right? Perfectionism consists of consistently setting unrealistic goals for yourself, high, unrealistically high goals for yourself, and not, when you don't achieve these goals, you feel terrible about yourself. Now, we don't want you feeling terrible about yourself. It is high standards. It's unrealistically high standards for yourself. Experience intense anxiety when things don't meet your expectations and struggle to accept anything less than flawless execution. Yeah, we want it to be flawless. We want it to be perfect. We want it to go our way. We want it to sit in a specific way. We want it the way we want it. You understand? Now, I'm going to dive through a list of a few things here that you might be checking off on your checklist over there at home and answering me this. Okay. So it's basically us saying, are you doing this? Are you doing this? Are you doing this? Then maybe, just maybe, you might be a perfectionist. And remember that I'm not the person to just tell you what you are just like that, right? Because it might be something else. It could be OCD. It could be just something. It could be stress related. It could be anything, right? But we are talking about perfectionism. So number one is high standards and expectations. And I say this a lot and I'll keep saying it. Our expectations are the same things that are breaking us. Guys, we spoke about expectations for a while. Our expectations of things, man, it's like the elephant in the room that we never thought would be an elephant in the room until it became an elephant in the room, and now we're just stuck with an elephant in the room. So you may strive for perfection in all areas of your life, from work and academics to personal relationships and hobbies. So if you are thriving for this, what does that mean? That means you are going for it. You are looking for it. You're trying for it. So if you want a personal relationship to be perfect, right? Then you might even find yourself pretending to be something that you're not in order for the relationship to seem as though it's going forward. And for a while, you do believe that it is actually going the way you want it to go, until somebody does something unexpected, until somebody shows their true colors, until somebody doesn't show their true colors, until somebody just goes out of character from what you have thought they are supposed to be. Not what they actually are, but what they are supposed to be. Because this is something that you made up, right? And this is something that you would like. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the next person is also going to be exactly the way you want them to be. So it's all you. So with academics, this is you studying until kingdom come. You making sure that you don't get lower than what. You making sure that your academics are on point. You making sure that you're getting cum laude. You making sure that it's distinction upon distinction upon distinction. You making sure of that. And then when it doesn't go your way, or how it doesn't go your way, right? Is maybe, just maybe, somebody bumps you. Somebody bumps you and you walk it off, and then you go and write. And because you are feeling a daze, somebody bumps you and you still get up and go to campus because you are most now obsessed with your academics. So you decide that you're not going to go to the hospital to get checked out. No, no, no. You've got an exam or you got a test. So you go and write the test anyways and you brush it off. And the worst part about this scenario is that you actually finish the test, né? But there's something that happened there by your mind. There's something that happened by your brain. And you're disoriented. You maybe have a concussion. Mm-hmm. You most probably have that. And you go and write, and you go and write gibberish, honey. You write the gibberish. You go and write gibberish, and you finish with that. And then on your way home, that's when you faint, and then people take you to the hospital from that point, right? After you have written the exam. And then you go and get yourself checked out. And after you get checked out, that's when they hospitalize you a little bit. And keep in mind, you already finished the exam, ne? You already finished it. You already wrote what you wrote. So it's always better to, when something happens, when something like this happens, it's always better for you to miss the test instead of going to write the test and failing it because you are not okay. Right? But then you opted like, because you are smart, Moss, and your academics are academicking. So you decide that you're going to go. So after,
no matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Diporaminge no wapengwa eva tere ulikoni mwondi tete ingida ashike katenu meko tete okowe ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa uri mehola mo iho otike kovano hile koshuwana konu ngeshefa ya kungwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipingi konu konda doi nyawa minuto otukwetira o special ange bashake ngeshefa omarude kayo loka otuna ushengife nawa nofumuna oijaweli nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM kondura itatimwe bali hea mi nola natu heali bali no heali ineko berewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who you know doesn't have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the Aha.
Alrighty. Woo, my dear. Guess what happened to me? I got an attack. But anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, so you must now opted to write the test, and then you are hospitalized, and then all of that, and you think that everything is going well because you just started feeling dizzy later, and you just started feeling some type of way later, but you are fine now. Then you get back home, and then you continue with school, you continue with life, and then the test comes back. When the test comes back, ladies and gentlemen, the test comes back with you scoring a whooping 25%. 25% is something that you are not used to. It's something that you cannot handle. For starters, let's just start at handling. And it's something that you never expected. And these are your points. These are your marks. And it's 25%. You can't go and dispute it. Because even if you take a doctor's letter, everybody will be like, yeah, but why did you come? You came because you are fine. You came because you're fine. We are not going to give you a makeup test. We're not going to give you a makeup exam. We're not going to give you SAP. We're not going to give you nothing. You failed. It's 25%. And that is how you would experience your academics not being perfect in the weirdest twist. Or another way would be that something happened to you and you went on to fail. And it's not what you expected because you feel like you've studied. And I've seen this a lot with people with undiagnosed ADHD and undiagnosed, disorders of some type. They struggle a lot. Some people struggle a lot with academics, right? And it's not because they are not academics or it's not because they are blue collar, but it's because the teaching style that they are learning in is not a style that is conducive for them. It's not a way in which that they can learn. For example, we have R. Kelly. And I know you guys don't want to hear about Robert, but think about it. R. Kelly is dyslexic. right? So that's like a reading learning disorder. It's like a reading disorder. Or it's like a reading mix up somewhere, right? So he sees words differently. He reads them differently. He writes them differently. It's just the way he is. And he is one of the greatest artists of all time. So it's not that people that are different are dumb. It's that people are just different. That's it. We are just different. We learn in different ways. We are individuals. We just live different lives. So if you were experiencing like a disappointment within your academics, for example, and you are blaming it on being a perfectionist, right? It could be that a way that could have disappointed you is the fact that you studied so hard and the results didn't come out the way you wanted them to come out, or the way you expected them to come out, or it was not measured up to the effort that you had put in. And this is something that can really honestly like just crush you mentally. And it's something that can really go a long way. That's why I always say, like, for the children that don't make it, try again. But also learn about yourself, you know, learn about yourself. Ask yourself if you are really struggling, or is it just that this year you are just going through a lot, and give yourself grace, you know. It's not all of us that have it rosy. And for the days that we don't have it rosy, can we just understand that we are not having a rosy day, we're not having a rosy year. It's not our season to go through roses, but we are pushing and we are trying our level best. And a perfectionists in the workplace could be people that like their work to be done a specific way, like their work to be on time, like their work to be perfect and immaculate. And this is great in terms of an employer, for example. An employer would serve him good, him or her good, to have at least one perfectionist on the team. And this perfectionist must be in a middle or leadership role. Middle is nice because then they get to check all the juniors, and then they also get to do the seniors' work. And then when they're at the senior, they get to check everybody's work and make sure that all the work is the way it's supposed to be. But sometimes also following the rules to the T is also something that can and might cost. But we're not talking about that. So setting unrealistic goals, right, is you thriving, you going for perfection in areas that really can't have perfection, like academics, personal relationships, and work, and even maybe hobbies. Imagine being the best at walking. And it used to be something that you did for fun, and now it just becomes a chore. Or you used to wash dishes because it calms you and you really like washing dishes. But then now it just becomes something like a chore that you have to do it, because if you don't do it, you will not sleep, because like everything in the house has to sleep perfect. And this is where these little things are born that can grow into something else. So, number two, expecting flawlessness. Aha! Expecting flawlessness is expecting perfection. Expecting things to be ideal. Expecting things to be flawless. Expecting your skin to just be looking like melanin popping. Expecting flawlessness. You may have a hard time accepting mistakes or imperfections, either in your own work or the work of others. You might have a difficult time accepting the fact that, that people make mistakes and that you are capable of making a mistake. Now, if ever you are corrected when you have made a mistake, people that are are hard on themselves, right? I would say hard on themselves. I wouldn't say perfectionists, but I would say people that are hard on themselves. Usually, it's either they get defensive about being wrong, and then they make it seem like they were not wrong, or if they were wrong, they were wrong because somebody else did something wrong, and that's why they are actually correct, but they are not wrong, as you indicated. Or you also find the different kind of person that accepts the fact that they are wrong, but the way they feel about it, the way they go and talk to themselves about it, the way they let that problem linger on their hearts, the way they let that problem eat at their soul, eat at their minds, right? That's the unhealthy part. That's the part that we're talking about. Kucha, sometimes, right, you have such difficulty accepting the fact that you are a human being that is capable of making mistakes, and this is the mistake that you have made. You are not perfect, and you beat yourself up about not being perfect, and you ask yourself things, or you say things to yourself such as, I should have seen it, I should have known better, I should have reread that paper, I should have done this, I should have done shoulda, woulda, coulda. And you live in a world of shoulda, woulda, coulda because you find it difficult to accept the fact that you are not perfect and other people are also not perfect. And in a different case scenario, this would be you picking up on somebody else's mistake and you badgering them and hackering them and basically beating them to a pulp because of it. And I'm not talking about physical beating, even though some people do beat other people for making mistakes. And we often see this in children. When children make mistakes, adults are so quick to beat children, and they might, and this is where the things develop, no? You start developing this mindset of, I must be perfect, otherwise I'm not lovable, and otherwise my parents will not like me, and they will not love me, and they will not want to have me in their lives because I am not perfect. And this is the mind of a child, right? And this is how other perfectionists were born, from making mistakes, and they were not accepted, or they were not reprimanded in a loving manner. So your child is washing dishes, and then your child gets startled by something, and then they drop the cup. You come from the room. It's a belt. It's a shambok. It's a gun. And there are parents that take out guns for their kids. And I don't know. I don't know what that is, but I don't think that that's right. I don't think that you should be scaring your children with guns. Like, you're, What monster are you creating? Who are you creating? Because some monsters are not born, they are created, right? So there are days in people's lives, psychopaths, sociopaths' lives, right? Where they remember that this is the day that I was made to be this person. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening, the matriarch.
Good evening, my dear.
So what's up?
I'm good. Before, what's poppin'?
Before you ask, it's Baby Joe. It's been a minute.
I know it's Baby Joe. What's up? What's up? How you doing?
How did you know it was me?
I know it's you. Oh, guys, I've been doing this for a while. My senses just go off the roof now. You know when you don't have vision,
yeah,
your other senses start to work. So because we are operating with our ears, right? Our ears now become our eyes. Mm. Yeah, so you can speak to me and I'll know instantly who you are, because I don't work with my eyes here, I work with my ears. Uh-huh. So how you doing?
It's all right.
Mm.
But I want to ask for advice.
All right. Okay, but before you ask for advice, do you believe that you are a perfectionist?
Excuse me, what?
Do you believe that you are a perfectionist? Do you like things to be done perfectly?
Do I like things to be done perfectly?
Yes, by you or other people.
Yes, I am.
Okay, and then when they're not done perfectly, how do you feel?
How do I feel?
Yes, my dear.
That's a simple question, and I'll answer it.
Okay.
Don't you answer right now?
Yeah. How do you feel when it's not done perfectly? When things are not done the way you want?
First of all, I won't feel good. Because, I mean, let me say I woke up to my homie. I tell him to do something, and he does the opposite.
Hmm.
I'll be disappointed in him. And I'll also be a little bit mad too.
Okay, what if it was an accident?
What if it was an accident?
Mm. What if you told your friend not to drive the car and then your friend drives the car and then your friend bumps the car by mistake?
My car? Or is it his car?
It's your car. Say.
So the car is mine. And this specific car, let me say my car, I don't have a car, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, your let's car, say, your future car.
Okay, let's say my car is a BMW M4 competition.
Is that one? Yes.
Yes, that one with the twin turbo.
Yes.
Okay, that one now.
Yeah.
Okay, I tell...
Hey! Yay! Even in an imaginary world, you're already angry. You're saying, So, yeah, your friend takes that one.
Okay. My friend accidentally bumped my car.
Yeah.
I don't think it was an accident.
It was an accident. You don't even know which friend it is. It was an accident. See this guy. You're already trying to make it seem like they're just jealous of me. Even in a hypothetical story, sir. Ha.
But still though, how did my friend get the car keys?
No, the car keys were there. You were at your house. So now do you hide your car keys or what when you are living at your house? You know when you live by yourself, right? Your things are usually just everywhere.
Yes.
Your payslip is just there because nobody touches your stuff and nobody comes over like that.
So I'm a lonely person now?
No, you're not a lonely person. You just have your own flat.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You have your own flat. Your friend came through. And when your friend came through, you were like, no, you know what? Don't drive the Black Beauty, man. Don't drive the car because there's something. No. The car maybe has like a problem or something, or you don't want him to drive because you know how he drives. So he's like, I won't. No problem, man. I won't. Then you go and take a shower because you are almost now maybe going out together. Then you just hear brrr. You just hear your gate closing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. My goodness. And you cannot chase him now with the polo. You just hear pop, 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 pop. You run out of the shower with soap and everything, my dear. Hey! Hey, Benny! Benny! Benny, you're going to buy that, bro. Benny! Pop, 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 pop. And then you just see the headlights, you know, when he's stopping, then the red lights come on, Moss. You just see, then you thought maybe he's reversing. After that, it's just vroom, gone, my dear.
Oh.
Then you go back and then you try and call him. And then he's like, I'm quite angry, no hungry, no, no, or she get man. Oh, no, I'm coming now, and I got a dead beer.
Yeah.
2 hours later.
2 hours.
2 hours later. Yeah, Benny. Yeah. I know me bro, we pay you, I know me bro, man. We cannot. Oh, and you know, man, when I get that, I'm going to get that, and they have to pay.
Yeah,
then,
yeah,
you just,
yeah, yeah.
Then you just hear, then you just hear, I know you're quite a good attaching. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you just hear the indicator. Yeah, you just hear the horn. Beep, 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 beep.
My baby.
Him is without a scratch. He gets out of the car without a scratch.
Yeah.
You, yours is written off. And it is 2 days before you were going to put in insurance.
Yeah.
2 days. Because you are going to go to insurance on Monday so that you can get insurance, Moss. For the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Monday.
On Monday.
So yeah, Monday. Benny came to do these things on Friday.
Yeah.
Eh. So?
Oof. So my friend came out with any.
No scratch, no broken leg, no nothing. Nothing happened to Benny.
But something happened to my baby.
My dear, your car is written off, say.
Someone is gonna bleed.
Why?
I mean, that
it's only a car.
That I was in love with.
Ah! That you were in love with. It's a material thing, man. It's not, at least it's not a woman.
Okay.
You know, at least it's not your wife, my dear. Your wife and your kids, they are still there. It's just a car.
It's just a car.
Yeah. I mean, and the buggy is there. The Mazda. Single cap. Yokofarama is there. You can still go to work. If it is work you are worried about, you can still go to work. That's the problem.
Yeah, but this friend of mine, he's going to pay my car. I mean, he's going to have to fix my car.
Your friend is unemployed. Pay your car with what? With his life or what?
I mean...
You mean what? You mean what? Here is a story of acceptance. You mean what? He's an orphan also, so you cannot go ask his parents.
Hey!
What?
That's not an excuse. He has to pay me.
From where? The guy has been looking for a job for 10 years.
Hey. That's my car. I mean,
hey.
I probably walk my A off, and then this nigga comes out of nowhere. He takes my car, knowing damn well I told him not to take the car. He has to find a way. Even if it takes his whole life to do it. Even though I'll probably go buy a new one, which I'll...
No, he's telling you that he will be paying $20.
$20 per hour.
No, $20. No, $20 per month.
Ah. But $20 is not enough, though.
I don't have. How?
I mean,
the person walks to work. Sometimes, like, the person goes job hunting, walking.
Yeah.
Hey.
Okay, so, okay, let me ask you a question. Do you want him to fix my car or not?
I know, even if he could, from where? Let's be realistic. Stop this unrealistic expectations.
But the whole story is...
What unrealistic expectations are you putting up, you? Yeah? Stop these unrealistic expectations. Hmm?
Okay. Okay, ma'am.
The way you are angry, the way you are angry for a...
No.
What?
A BMW M4 comp.
Yeah. Gone.
That baby got a twin turbo and...
Gone! The turbo did fall there.
Oh.
The turbo did fall there.
Oh. But he's gonna fix my car either way.
I know, how is he going to fix your car? The guy is walking to job interviews.
So you don't want him to fix my car. Yeah, you don't want him to fix my car.
I know, how is he going to fix your car? You guys must be realistic. This is what we are talking about. You people that are perfectionists, we are talking about you must have realistic goals. Eh?
Nah, listen.
How is he going to fix your car if he cannot even afford $13 to go to an interview? Every interview, he must get there early so that he can first stand outside and put on the roll-on so that he doesn't smell.
Yeah.
Eh? Because he's going through a lot.
Yeah.
And now you are telling me that, oh no, this guy must pay for my car. How? What you mean, pay for my car? He can't pay $13 taxi. Even the beers that he went to buy is because he found money inside your car. What's your problem? Hmm? Be realistic, guys.
Okay, nah. Let's be realistic now.
Yeah.
So,
paying cars must be out of the picture.
Okay. This guy, my friend, he's broke as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Get any of your essential products for just $99 million at QSave. 1 kilogram each of Rice King Rice, Top Score or Bokomo Super Maize Meal, Sugar King, White or Brown Sugar, 500 grams Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliters Right Brand Sunflower Seed Oil. All 5 products for only $99 million. You save. I save. Yes, we all save at QSave.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, now you want your friend to be paying you back. From where?
Oh, okay, let's be realistic now.
Mm-hmm.
You say that my friend is broke as hell.
Yes.
And
maybe he has more money than him.
Okay, in this story, I'm kind of rich, right?
Yeah, you are fine. But you didn't get your car from heaven.
That's
also... Can't you see that you graduated from a Mazda Baki to this one?
Yeah.
The Baki you maybe got from your parents even.
Yeah.
And it's the one now taking your many kids to school and taking wifey to school also. So you finally got your nice thing, you know?
Okay.
This is high blood pressure. I can feel the high blood pressure from this side. Come on, okay. Hey.
Okay, so how close am I to this friend?
You love him. He's a brother to you.
like the brother I never had.
My dear, he's the brother you never had. When you were in a car accident, he was there. He went to stay at your house and made sure that he was taking care of your children. You know?
Yeah, he was there.
He has always been there for you. Not he was there for you, he has always been there for you.
Mm-hmm. We are super tight.
You and him are like brothers, my friend. That's why he even feels good. Ah, oh, what a shame, man. He was there when your mom passed away.
Yeah, he was there, yeah.
You know, he carried your father's casket. You know? He's all your children's godfather.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of them and you have six. Hey, this story is also taking you very far. Come on, you're six. Your wife only gave birth 3 times. She just only gives birth to twins. Chop, chop. You're having a nice life, huh? Then in the future, you're having a nice life. Because of my goodness. Yeah. Even when it was time, like when the babies came home with their mother from the hospital, he came to stay with you, you know? Came to stay with you, and when you wake up and go and help the kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's holding the other bottle, you are holding the other bottle, you are feeding the kids, guys, while the mother rests at least. Your wife appreciates you, guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your wife can be stuck in traffic somewhere or stuck wherever. And you can't go and get her. Him, he will go.
How? If he's broke?
No, he will be sent by you, Moss. You can always, like, maybe you are having a meeting and maybe your wife is stuck there at B1 City.
Yeah.
Then you can say, Kucha, I'm a bro. I'll send you $30. Just catch a taxi to the house and then go and pick up the keys and then you go and get Meme. He has driven your car before, but just with consent.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
Though I do appreciate what he did for me.
No, you love him. He's your brother. He's your person. At your wedding, yes, at your wedding he was the best man.
I am.
Oh.
I know. Okay, nah.
Oh no, love brother. Him. Like, yeah? Hey, you are trying to look for reasons to hate this guy. Oh no, brother. Hey, you're trying to look for reasons. I can hear. Hey, and then, my dear, as loyal as can be, my dear. But my car. What's that? Yeah, so he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's your brother. That other time when you were having kidney damage, he went to the hospital to go and see if he's a match for your kidney so he can donate one to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's me and him, we are that deep.
Yeah, my dear, he's your brother. The only difference is that you guys don't have one mother and one father, but he's your brother. He has been with you ever since Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
On good days and bad days.
Yeah.
You guys ate dry bread together.
Oh.
Because you know, Arime, bro, Tashkara now, Ike, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's your brother. Hmm. Hey, you're trying to find a way. Hey, he never did anything bad to me. Nothing. You have never fought with him a day in your life.
Yeah.
Ever. There's just never been any reason for you guys to fight. He respects you, you respect him. If there's a misunderstanding of any sort, you guys just sit and you guys just talk and finish it. Mm-hmm. You don't shout at each other, you don't disrespect each other, you don't do funny things.
Yeah.
Mm, the perfect brother. Because even our own brothers would never do that. Our siblings are very disrespectful.
Yeah.
And not shouting at each other. But this one, perfect.
Oh, he's just so...
Oh, my dear. Eh? Wafa wempe wa kukarunga, bra?
Eh, no, man.
Kucha, oh, ay. Rumbu nange no relationship ay, tunong kwa itao. Eh? I know, it's perfect.
Brandy, no.
The kids are asking, is Uncle Ben fine?
Yeah. Uncle Ben, how are you?
Without the scratch, my dear. It's like him, you are just taken out and put over there while the car is rolling.
Caray. Oh, Uncle Ben, I ain't gonna know. He's broke and this and me. That's a problem now.
Yeah, he might even be kicked out of his place for not paying rent. He might have to come and stay with you guys. Natarane. Yeah.
Okay, so you can obviously pay me back.
There's no paying back. That's why you leave it.
In the car
is not insured.
Yeah, Tarane. Okay,
so you have to work another 10 years to buy it again. Just drive your Mazda. Drive your Mazda, Bucky.
But I'm obviously gonna buy a new one. I mean, I'm rich, though, so...
You're going to buy another... You didn't buy that one like manna from heaven. You bought that one out of hard work and promotions and what?
Oh, so she didn't, you know...
You're not a bochocho? In this... Yes. No! You're not a bochucho, you're just a stand-up citizen. You're an ordinary guy, you go to work.
Oh.
I know, hey, no. So there's not another money for a BMW coming anytime soon, huh? And maybe you have to even continue paying that car off even though it's written off. For 5 years.
So I'm just gonna stick to the Mazda.
Yeah, Mubaki.
Oh, Mubaki, I don't care. Choko, no.
Yes. Nekem nari kwatange when you're opening it.
Okay, no. Nekani wa ikeke nari kwato.
That one that you are just happy that. It the license don't expire, you just keep paying for it. It doesn't go for roadworthy anymore because if it had to go for roadworthy, it would fail, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're not a bojocho. You're just an ordinary guy. Hey.
Okay, so what do you think I should do?
How? No, nothing more.
I shouldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just life.
Well, she just let it slide like that.
Yeah. Like, what could you possibly do now? Could beat up your friend or what?
It's not like I'm going to send him to the hospital or something. I'm not even...
The guy is fine.
Yeah.
Hmm? He was driving with the window open. So the car just... And he didn't have a seatbelt, so the car just put him out. He even landed on his feet. Kuchita kumwa kwa sha kano kambe kwa kumwa. Hey. So how would you handle that?
Honestly speaking,
I'm
gonna let it slide just a little bit.
Yeah? What are you going to tell your friend? You get there, then you tell your friend, like, your friend is like, oh, I'm so sorry, my bro. What are you going to say?
I don't know.
You were hoping that you were a bochocho so that you can go and steal money again and just buy another one. No, there's no that. They know that. You have 6 kids. You can't be a bochocho.
Yeah.
He's the thing now. I've never heard of anybody that wants to be a bochocho so bad. Oh, man. Yeah, nothing like that, brother. Nothing.
Yeah. Okay, so...
So how would you handle it? So you get there.
So while he's busy apologizing.
Yeah.
I'll stay calm in that situation.
You say what?
I'll stay calm. I'll try my best to stay calm in that situation.
Well, the breakdown is dragging your car. It's the off for me, guys.
Okay, you say that it was an accident and he's not the one that actually...
He's the one that... No, bumping the car is an accident. But his actions... But his actions... If he was not driving fast, the car wouldn't have gotten bumped. It wouldn't be like that.
But Tony...
Hey, this is where we are testing our friendships, really.
Yeah.
My dear. Jesus.
The first thing, he didn't listen to me. and all of a sudden, he bumped my car, but he didn't even get injured.
And would you prefer if he was dead or what?
I was asking
what I was. Okay, shingaka. You're making it sound like it would have been better if he was injured. Paralyzed, Dango.
But it's not like that, I mean.
It's not. No.
Yeah.
His guardian angels, they were there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was protected by the...
And he's a great person, so nothing like that will ever happen to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
And he has the audacity to say, oh, what in my own question?
Oh, yeah, but you like your things.
It's my things, lah.
And so?
Oh, I must love my things.
Whatever, I don't have it anymore.
That's the problem. I think I'll just let it slide. For now.
Okay, but how are you going to let it slide? Are you going to take the person? Say, Kucha, no, it's fine, my brother. Don't worry. Things like this happen all the time to other people. Not me, but other people.
Yeah. But, I mean, we'll just look on the bright side.
At least he's not dead. He's not injured. In Imairong.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, in this situation, I'll just let it die. Let it slide and look on the bright side.
Will you be angry with him for a little while?
Yeah, and I'll be like... Oh,
I need space.
Yeah.
I need like, space. Can I just spend a month without talking to you, please?
Yeah. But if I don't talk to him as I'm going to my crib, the kids are all just going to be like, oh, it's Uncle Ben, couldn't get now.
My dear, yeah, everybody wanted to go with you. So the kids are in the car. Yeah. And the kids are hugging Uncle Ben, my dear. Tata, you're not going to come in hug Uncle Ben. He was in a car accident. And you know, we're not going to get up on video, you know, nada más.
Okay, how would you handle that situation?
Well, for me, I like things, but I value people.
Yeah,
I value people and I value their presence. So I will definitely tell my friend Kucha, yo, bruh, I'm so angry with you right now, ne? I'm so angry with you because I'm very, very angry with you. But I will definitely still be, I'll be present and I'll still be happy that you made it. And because it's not your thing at the end of the day, ne? You are going to end up feeling bad. You know? So eventually one day when you are seeing me driving with the Mazda, you're going to feel bad. So I will just console you also. Pamwe, we can still salvage a few parts in the car, you know? Pamwe to vurukurandi samo gearbox or something, you know? Just to see what we can salvage from it because it's an expensive car. And yeah. Its parts are still expensive, and we can just scrap it, you know?
Yeah.
Tatu taranga. But I'm very angry with you, my friend. You just explained that. Now, me, I'm very angry with you, man.
Yeah, and that's quite a very matured way to handle that. Even though the car is gone, in Maka Inasha Ningiga.
Yeah. In Maka Inasha Ningisha, you know. Before the car, this person was there. After the car, this person will be there. And when you get another one, this person will be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to look at each other's presence in our lives. And then also, now you start hearing now from the people that want to divide others. Hey, that guy is just jealous of you. Kwe istambero wina.
Yeah.
Hey, ontondi wena ni.
Get it.
Hey, so now you have to sift through it and see if people are talking nonsense or whatever. But if this is how you describe them, if you describe them as good people, then the first time is the same way twice again and 10 times more. But yeah. What we can't really be blessed with is true friendship and true brotherhood.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're alive. There are people that are losing their friends. Imagine your friend takes your car and goes and dies in your car. That is why. You know? So it's great that he's alive and it's okay. No masafa nare pamwe. Kustapo kustapa. Ah, it's not the first time you'll be walking, man, you guys.
Yeah.
It's not that deep.
Oh, Uncle Ben,
huh? Hey, the way it's eating at you, and it's not even a real story. It's like you can see it, man. Like, oh, Uncle Ben, man. And there may be also things that you have done to him that were also equally big in life. And you guys learn to still manage it and go through it, you know? So, like, tomorrow is still another day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It could have been that you burned down Ben's house. You see? Matriarch can twist anything. Yeah. It could have been that you three, the reason that he's renting is because you burned down his house. The one that his parents left for him when they died.
Yeah.
And it was not insured. De tocosa.
Yeah.
All of his things. Yeah. So, you never know. But you also need to learn that you should be angry. But just verbalize and express it. Oh, pay for the kugera, man, me bro.
Yeah.
It mustn't be like, yeah, how can you do this? So I need to win a shike shike. No. You must just say, kucha, I am so angry with you. And you don't take it further. I think many of us fail in our relationships because instead of expressing that we are angry, we go and say things that we don't mean out of anger. Instead of just saying that we are angry. Because when you say that you're angry, ne, the person keeps quiet. There's nobody in the history, ne, not unless the person is crazy, but there's nobody in the history, ne, of hearing somebody saying, which I'm angry with you, that ever goes up. Even if our parents tell us, kucha, oh, metria konte kuhera, gandi mwena tu.
Yeah.
Tandikara and afaka andi mwena mwembo, eh? Because at this point, inohara kumchata kumadhi, inohara kumuvithanai, and all of that knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you are saying nothing, and then the person thinks that you are fine.
Yeah.
And then the person starts to irritate you, shashi, yotapopaini maemos. And then that thing is the part where you are like, ano kuete kuchonde kuhera, ano. Anandi shimono nengi, ningo shiparashosho, ala shimoni kanga, okay, sip. Hey, your face always just looks like that. You're just generally an angry guy.
Yeah,
so how will I know most now? Yeah, so I think we must just start saying it, like, which I'm so angry with you right now. I need like a little moment, but I'm going to be fine. I'm not, I'm just angry with you, but it's nothing. That's it. Na shita popi na nguo kushishinga kucha, inandijaterera shinene, you know?
Yeah.
Eh, because my friend is angry with me. Shashondani nguo epuko shiri.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then that way, even healing from it, ne, would be better. It's better than the person that just keeps talking, Marwe, or they just did something bad. And they just keep talking to you like, what in the panda, shwaning any. No man. Oh, you look quite strange. It's a handy cook, quite handy cook, panda, shema? Oh. No! But it's because the person doesn't know that you're angry with them. And they have never heard you say that you're angry with them. So they assume that it's just another thing that passed through our life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you can say, oh, Uncle Ben, man, we bro, I'm angry with you, man. Pifene, I'm angry with you. For now, let me just take the kids home, and I'll speak to you tomorrow or the day after. Tegere ramanga ndiki hekereke.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you say that, ane, oteku po space ayeno ho, and even when he's apologizing, it kesho ko apologizing na wiyako kuningi ranae 20 messages after each other.
Yeah.
No, he's angry, but he did say, ne, after 2 to 3 days that he will call. So in 2 to 3 days, you call ngane. If you didn't call, then if they call, then you answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you say, hey, brother, oof. Otwaetwa. It's like, oh, my bro, man. Hi. We pay yan. I don't know how bad I get to be here, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Shashino, at the end of the day, this is your person. This is your brother. So. Yeah. Like, there's just no way in your life, ne, that you would want to even lose this person. And this, yeah. They also don't want to lose you. When the mood to know Tanaraman, I believe that many of us, right, look at the situation in which we are in, and then we think that it's permanent, but it's not permanent. There are worse things that you guys went through. Hey, burned houses, hey, heartbreak, hey, parents died, hey, oh my God. Wife gone to ICU. Wingana Beni te kufiki kwa ipangiro. Taka kara nuno na we. Tatereke.
Ya, tatereke.
Sheri. Nehe, tatereke. Yete ya tata ninge shifta kuchangwe indane manga kembo. Ndatereka, just eat, go and bath, and then sleep for an hour, and then you come back, and then atu ninge shifta. But it's not his wife. It's your wife, but he's doing it for you.
From sunrise to supper time, Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth one plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
Namib Mills, proudly Namibian, passionately feeding the nation.
Namib Mills, feeding the nation.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Taboto Wirimbera, Uncle Ben's friend. I moved your heart today.
Yeah.
I pulled your heart strings. Yeah. So when we are in heated situations with loved ones, ne, we have a tendency of forgetting exactly where you come from and our experiences, no? So if we can remember that before we say anything, if we can express ourselves, the problem sometimes, you come from matriarch, and you heard now, takutuwa natuwe expressing, then you express yourself, you know. You're like, oh, Ben, my brother, I'm very angry with you right now. Can we just talk tomorrow? Oh, Peni ke shuvite konejo. Pefa ohane. Nasibonu tamu yukara.
Yeah.
Eh. But all in all, it's just communication. It's just really honestly communicating. And also just sometimes people overtalk like that because they are nervous and they are scared. So it's just reassuring them and still going through your own process. Kucha, my brother, there's nothing that's going to happen. I'm just angry right now. But we will talk. Yeah, it's not a big deal. We will talk. But I'm just angry right now. Just give me this space, Akash or Nike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry. On a second.
And so what you are saying is that I should stay calm in her situation, actually.
Yeah. If you can. Yeah. If you can stay calm, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you can stay calm, yes. But if you can't stay calm, just explain it without offending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just explain it without offending. Yo, right now, I am so angry. Masakin. The best thing that I would like right now, indike man.
Yeah.
Inda ukapite poshipangere utarengere uri now. Mara indike manga man. I will talk to you tomorrow. I'll talk to you the day after. Don't worry. Sometimes telling somebody not to worry, is all they needed. Kucha ewa.
Yeah, because the person might think about something.
Exactly.
And they might even think about suicidal thoughts. Like,
yeah.
I just going to forgive me.
Mm-hmm. And he's the only family I have.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Why did I do that? Yeah. You see, then you breed another problem. I know.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's it. Okay. Tamanamos. Now you can ask me your question quickly. You are so emotional about your imaginary car.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my car, man, guys.
Oh, how glad you, man.
Oh, my dear.
But at least Ben is alive.
At least your friend that has been with you through everything. Even when you went to get the car, you went together. Oh.
Yeah, my brother was there.
And no, so doesn't mean that there will be no other cars that are gonna come in the future.
Yeah.
You know.
But I'm glad you are okay.
Yeah. 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 Okay. So what did you want to ask?
Well, you remember our last conversation when you were motivating me?
Yes.
Yeah. So the thing is, The motivation is starting to disappear and
you need again a refiller.
Yes, I want to.
Why is it disappearing?
I feel like what I want to achieve is taking forever.
How long is it supposed to take?
I don't know.
Then how do you know it's taking forever?
Because I'm not getting it.
When are you supposed to get it? You don't know when you're supposed to get it, but but you think it's taking forever, but you don't know when it's supposed to come.
Yeah, and I just feel like it was supposed to be sooner, man.
Why? What are you in a hurry for?
I mean, I want to know how it feels like to achieve what I want to achieve.
Are you sure that that is the real reason, or is it just that something has happened that has been financially challenging to you, and now you feel like your dreams are taking too long to materialize? Because if your dreams had materialized, then this type of problem would not be in your dream, in your future.
A little bit.
Is it a little bit, or is it a little bit a lot? Because if there was no challenge, then you wouldn't really be complaining, because then you'd be en route, right? Mm-hmm. So, right now, let's look at the challenge. What is the challenge? What's the financial challenge that happened?
That is no longer about financial. I mean, what I told you before, I post that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, I want to focus on school.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to my principal, and my principal told me that I should first focus on school, because right now I don't got a startup capital, and he told me that I should focus on school, study very hard, and continue, because at university I have a high chance of getting the capital.
Yeah.
That's where I continue.
Mm-hmm.
And now studying, it's what I'm doing. Like every day after school, I practice on my weakest subject. And now I feel like I've done more than enough. Knowing damn well it's not enough.
Mm-hmm. Like you're tired.
Yeah, but I know that it's not enough, because exam is in 2 months.
Mm.
And I want to focus more. I want to focus on my studies, because I believe that if I don't in the exam, it's not gonna be good for me.
Okay, so where do you study? At home?
I study at home. I get really practice.
You study where else?
At school.
At school?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, so you guys have like an after school or a place where you can sit and study?
Yeah, I'm actually in a study group. It's not not really studying, but it's more on practicing, because we are practicing on our weakest subject.
Okay.
Which is mathematics, and I'm doing that right now.
Okay. Change your environment. What's happening is just boredom. You're just bored. Yeah. Change your environment. Change your room.
Change my room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Change your room and change the color of the beddings. Change whatever you can change. If you're sharing a room, then change the side where the bed stays.
Mm-hmm.
And do some spring cleaning. For this weekend, do some spring cleaning, change the room, change the bed, and organize your books in such a way that they are in front of you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and put something on the wall. Like write on a nice paper. Yeah? Put something on the wall and say, you got this.
Baby Joe, please do call back so that we can finish our conversation. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? Ladies and gentlemen, we are almost now doing the most. We're talking about perfection. We're talking about our flaws. We're talking about where we are at. We are giving you examples, and we are trying our utmost best. And we were having a conversation with Baby Joe, and I would like for him to call back so that we can finish that conversation, because I think that it is a conversation that many of us feel, and it is a conversation that is worth having, because at the end of the day, right, some of us feel it, some of us are in it, some of us are thinking it, but not many of us are brave enough to talk about it. Yeah?
Good evening. Hello, hello. Hey. You're back.
Yeah.
So you change your environment, because what I can tell you about being on course for something that is greater, that's taking a little bit of time, right? Is that the journey there is redundant. It's redundant. It's boring. It's hard. It's not nice. There's too many sacrifices.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you need to do is have an environment, ne, where it's nice. Your room. Yeah. Yeah. Your room. So change the way the room looks. Wash your clothes. Clean up. Clean the windows. Wash your curtains. Mm-hmm. Yeah, spend this weekend just making the room nice and anticipating where you're going to go and be studying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then exercise.
Exercise.
Yeah, exercise. Mm-hmm. Like, not excessive exercise to make you tired and all of that. Even just like a walk around your street, like 5 times.
Yeah.
Right? It will clear your mind. You are not on a bad track. You are exactly where you need to be, and I'm proud of you. But it happens. To backslide, it does happen. Right? So take time. Just keep doing it until you get the hang of it. And that's what usually happens when you're close to the finish line, Moss.
Yeah, someone told me that the person told me that obstacles should not discourage you, but rather encourage you that you are getting closer to your goal.
Yeah. I'm not too much of a fan of quotes, because when I feel opposite to it, then what?
Then what?
Yeah, then what? The reason that I don't like quotes so too much is because tomorrow I might feel in a different way. Then what? Then I must look for another quote again that fits me today.
Yeah.
No, just leave. So.
Young Namibians who have recently turned 18 years old, the time has come for you to take your first step in exercising your constitutional right of voting. Register as a voter during the supplementary registration of voters, which takes place from the 4th until the 19th of August 2025. Uphold your civic duty. Get involved, step up for your right, and register to vote.
All right. Okay, so? So just keep going. I know you don't want to keep going, but just keep going. For the finish line's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it happens, and it's normal. Just be consistent. Just keep doing it. Even if you don't have motivation, you just do it. Even if you don't want, just do it. Do you think that it's every day that I want to come to work? My colleagues are in the north watching Miss Namibia, guys. Hey, the office. Yeah? Don't know how many times I tell myself, you know what? I'm just gonna tell the people that I'm not feeling well. Or I'm just going to, I don't want to go to work. Do you know how many times I feel like that?
I mean, is your job even exhausting?
It doesn't seem like it's exhausting because it's nobody else's job. It's mine, right? But it's yeah. exhausting, just like everybody else's jobs are exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also go through the motions just like everybody else. I also have my challenges and my obstacles just like everybody else. There are also just days that I don't want to talk me. I just want to keep quiet.
Yeah.
But my bread and butter comes from talking.
Yeah.
So I come and I do what I must do. And that is the first step, right? To being an adult. Yeah. Because adults don't stop. Responsible adults don't just stop because they don't want to do something or they don't like that thing at that moment, right? Because there's a lot riding on it. If I don't come to work, my children don't eat. If I don't come to work, my listeners, ne, like yeah. Baby Joe, has nobody to talk to, ne, that can understand him.
Yeah.
You see? If I don't come to work, right, then the person that needed to hear, ne, something to make them change their minds, whether they are suicidal or they are depressed or they are feeling alone, doesn't get that. So it can't just be about me. It's understanding that there's a greater cause. So if you're not improving your academics, right? That means that Mazda buggy will be the only buggy in your house.
Yeah.
To be the only car in your house.
And I don't want that Mazda buggy.
You don't want the Mazda buggy in the house,
eh? Yeah.
Yes. If you don't pull your weight, right? That means the parents, ne, will never have double pride. Because what you are working on right now is double pride, right? You are working on the academics so that they are proud of you in terms of the academics. Then you are going to also get them out of your head so you can actually do your forex things, your money things the way you want, right? And that's going to be double pride. And then even when you are done with your forex things and you are okay, then you can always go and do your academics as a hobby even. But
yeah. But
you have options. There are people that don't have options at all. They just have to be a housekeeper. There's nothing else. They just have to be an accountant. There's nothing else. And you are in a position where you actually are putting yourself in a place where you have options.
Yeah.
Yeah. So take it like that. Take it from a perspective of I'm working hard and I'm doing these things so that I myself, right, I can have options. I can choose. Many, many, many black boys, right, are pushed into things. Because they don't have real options. Ah, yeah, Kalisala.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Because there's just no other option. Huh? But you are putting yourself in a position where one day you can choose, do I want to be a lawyer or do I want to be an architect or do I want to be an engineer or do I want to be a financial advisor or do I want to be what do I want? And anything that you put yourself in, it's going to be by choice, not by circumstance.
Mm.
Yeah.
You're right.
I went to pick up my car at MNZ today.
Excuse me?
I went to pick up my car at MNZ today.
A word?
Yeah, but I don't know how to drive. Hey, no. Hey. But I always told myself that Gandhi don't get a cash at them. It is what it is. Otandi ilongele kuhinga keshete. You dig. And to wait many years, it's absolutely fine. But to have options. Yeah. Put yourself in a position of options, having options. I know that you don't want to do it. And you can even write there, I don't want to do it, but I'm doing it for future me. One day you're going to invite me to your graduation. And I'm going to rock up.
Yeah.
I'm going to rock up and I'm going to give a speech about how I met you as baby Joe. He's having his whole life together. And then he just flipped the script and he decided, right, that this is what he's going to do. And he's going to give himself options. If you want to be an accountant, you can be an accountant. If you want to be a lawyer, you can be a lawyer. If you want to be a lawyer and an accountant, yes,
yeah,
you can. So I know it's not easy. Especially when other kids are having fun in their life. Especially when they are chopping money. Oh. I don't tell you, Mariwa, man. And you're like, oh, and me, I'm here reading math. Kucha, oh. Kucha, my gut mess. But it does get better. Do what you went to do and get out. That's it. You went to school in Dishi to pass and get out, huh? Pass and get out. That's it. That's it. Just pass and get out. Don't linger. Don't linger and don't get distracted. Because you know that you are just there to pass and get out. You're not there for friends. You're not there for chilling. You're not there for falling back. You're not there for those things. You are just there to make it. If I'm getting my 60%, I'm getting my 60% or poor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not aiming for distinctions. What? I just want to pass. I want to pass well enough to get me into a good school. I want to pass well enough so that other people feel encouraged to pay for me. Yeah, that's it. And then when you get to varsity, you apply the matriarch's rule. Get in, do what you went there to do, and get out. Sharp. May I have graduates under my belt, huh? From my time here at Eagle FM, I have graduates under my belt. I think I have 3.
No need to brag, bro.
No, I know, but you guys are my graduates. You guys are my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm talking about my kids, you guys. Undimulo na enjoy ko radio uju tatu wa graduata in the time that I have met them. You see? Some I've met in first year, some I've met in high school. And they made it. Some I met when, like Mia, for example, Mia was already in varsity, you know, but she was having a hell of a time, but she managed, and I'm very proud of her. So as we push through, that's what we do, baby Joe, as we push. That's it. If you don't have the motivation, my dear, you have me. You might not have many things, but you are the matriarch's child. And the matriarch's children as we keep going.
Amen.
There's just no other way.
Yeah.
We are already coming from less advantaged places. There's just, yeah. Success is the only way. Of shiri, like it's the only way. And I know a lot of people say that you don't need a paper and you don't need a degree and you don't need what, ne? And you don't need an education. In education, you have it, ne? So that the people that you are talking to, right? They don't undermine you. Even if you never use it, the fact that you got it shows due diligence, shows that you are capable. Nandino Irongiza, Nando va a graduita and de tu itura ha cogido un pete. It doesn't matter. It's still yours. It's still under your name.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you get your paper. If you have an opportunity, go for it. Shiri shiri. Don't itwitere ponde toningo hata teka no shike ai. You just do what you went there to do. Disho wa yao uka pitende to peo degree yo, eh? That's it. So pay fair. Atu repeat and dishi. And all we want is better marks so that we can have the option to go wherever we want to go and dishi. So that no door is closed on us and dishi. Yeah, that's what we want. We want to have options. That's it. If we pass so well, we can apply for medicine. We can apply for law. We can apply for whatever we want, Moss. Yeah. So, if not, why not?
Yeah.
The world is our oyster, my dear. Kungula kakuna mwene. Kwa tatu iho. Tatara nao kwa tu na kwe hakati. Tatu baza no ben. Tukala ndo mashete hetu?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, na wifi, hey, na auntie matriaka, hakatawa every Saturday.
Yeah,
Joshi mwenyo.
Yeah.
Na anything I nihakura lakon betenji kane na, hakura na penya rune na mami.
Yeah.
And then the harando latanya ilenjo katara shakanji mo seti dikaite ta TV si wongronen. Yeah. It is what it is. Ndiaro konikta sa. Ndiaro tumbwa kantu eriatan. Exactly. We don't have an option of where we come from. We don't have that luxury. But we do choose where we are going. The decisions we make right now, they impact where we are going. So don't do it because it's fun. Don't do it because you love it. Do it because you must do it so that you can have options later. So you keep studying that math. But also, give yourself this weekend. This weekend, don't touch books. If you're touching them, it's just to make them neat. Then you just clean your environment. No matter where you live, no matter what situation you're in, just clean the environment. Ekete na reni rikoshenya kwetu. Uno na umati. E hordeina. Kera reko mo 96. Wash the keten. Wash your bed sheets. Shiri shiri. You guys only wash your clothes and your body. To kombo monde to pare ke mona wana ngwe to tini ne mono ka spray.
Yeah.
Ngwe then you move the bed so that when you're laying on the bed it doesn't feel like you're in the same place. Yeah. Because now all your dreams have been in that same corner, Moss. Yeah, so now you just move the bed. Even if it's just a little bit. You put the cupboard this side, you move the bed to the other side. Yeah. Ngurunguru nini kanjata magumba saa kwetu akoliki. Yeah. Osho ne. Tangaranga mini maini air. Yes. That's it. It just starts with little things like spring cleaning and cleaning your environment. Cleaning your environment gives you a sense of control. Because you can't control the world outside, but you can control your environment. And you can also control where you want your future to go. So for this weekend, you work on yourself. You clean up, you rest from school. Then you go start over again. With your study group, also try changing the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kucha, no, let's go and study in that other class or in that other ward. Well, let's try under the tree today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it might do you guys a world of good as well. because you are an adventurous person. So what hit you is just boredom. A zaza. Boring, but you're gonna be okay. Stick to it, that's it. Hey. Joe.
Yeah.
Are you motivated?
I mean,
how are you feeling?
It's big.
Big?
Yeah, it's big. But not big like how it was, but it's a little bit different now.
Yeah. But you got this. You know this, right? You got this. I have faith in you and I believe in you.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I have another question.
Okay.
Relax.
Who said I'm not relaxed? I'm relaxed. Who said I'm not relaxed? How can you accuse me of not being relaxed?
Okay, the question is, how do I emotionally detach myself from other people's gossip?
Other people's gossip?
Yeah.
What are what is being said? First of all, we can't just detach, right? We have to look at what is being said.
Yeah.
That is making us feel some type of way. Then we have to look at what is making us feel some type of way about it, and why do we feel that way about it? Because sometimes we are just in our feelings because somebody is talking the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what is the gossip?
You know, sometimes. Yes, I'm in the classroom. And I want to ask a question. I want to ask the teacher a question. Inside I'm like, what would these other people think about me if I'm just asking a question? Or what would these people say about me? You know, just, it's not really like gossip in a
No, business. I hear what you're saying, and I have an answer. Ask so that somebody says something.
Yeah.
You're a go-getter, Moss. And you're not afraid of conflict, Moss.
Yeah.
So if you're not afraid of conflict, ask. Ask the teacher, and if they say something, right, then you tell them that, do you know that in the next 5 years we'll never even see each other ever again? We'll never see each other ever again in 5 years. So it doesn't even really matter what you are saying today. Because in 5 years' time, we will not know. We will not see each other ever again after this. You guys are not my future friends. Yeah. So whatever you say right now, it can't hold water because me, I'm not here for you.
Yeah, it's more like trying to fit in.
Yeah, why are you trying to fit into something that you are not even going to have forever?
Yeah.
For people that you are not going to see for 30 years. Do you know that there are certain people that I went to school with, that ever since we left school, I haven't seen them. That was 2009. We're in 2025. I have not seen them one day in my life ever again, ever. So, don't let your life be determined by people that don't matter. You don't matter, bruh. Like, that's it. You ask. Or if you are really, really, like, struggling with it, to be honest, right? Because it's not every day that you're in the mood to fight, you know? Some days you're, like, too tired to fight. If you're really struggling with it, write the question down. Write the question down. And when you're done, go and ask the teacher. When you guys leave the class, stay back and ask the teacher.
Oh, and sometimes when I don't ask a question in class, mainly because I have a problem. I actually have a problem. I stutter a lot.
That's
why I only ask a question, not like that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually struggle with that. I really do stutter, and I feel like the only way to tackle this problem is by speaking really, really fast or really, really slow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But it doesn't mean anybody's laughing at you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's just our own insecurities, right? But trust me, when you grow up and you're a grown-up, ne? There are certain things that you didn't think are going to be cool that are going to end up being cool. You're going to step within your element. And it's okay to be different.
Yeah,
it's absolutely okay to be different. And it's good that you know your flaws, right? So if you know your flaws, then you find ways to still survive within your flaws. So if you have a problem with asking questions in class, you can always tell your teacher that I struggle with stuttering. So I feel a little shy about asking questions in front of my classmates. But this is the question that I wanted to ask. If you can help me. I can even come to you a bit later if you don't have time now. Because that shows, that is every teacher's dream. Every teacher wants a student that is trying for themselves. You understand what I mean? Are you there?
I'm here.
Are you zoning out or what? What is this? You're visualizing. Are you a visual person? Yeah.
You could say that.
Okay. All right. So take it from there. Ask. Ask or step outside and go and ask. But write your questions down. If you don't get the answer that you are looking for from the teacher, right? Lucky you have a study group. So it can always be a question that is posed within the group. So that one of your peers can explain it better to you. And then you're also having the internet that can also assist you. Yeah.
Problem. A man in Hebrew, no atama. That is not enough to problem. Oh.
It's okay. Because you can always ask whoever is having,
you are right.
To
you
help. Are right. We will not stay back because we don't have right now. Because as we're going to have iPhone 20 Pro Max Plus Plus 6.
Yeah.
In the future, right. So be so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are aiming for higher. So just because we are down right now doesn't mean it's where we are going to stay. Because nothing is permanent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing bad, nothing good. Everything is always moving. Yeah. So, we're good. Yeah. Do you feel better?
Yeah. And you say that even you've never seen your schoolmate friends
no
for a really long time.
No.
And
Yeah. Like being a teenager is a trap. It is a trap, and me, I will always tell you the truth, right? When you are young, you are so consumed about that life because that's all you know. And then you get to varsity and then you realize that nobody cares. No one. You are just fighting for yourself out here. So I'm telling you now that this got friends that mean so much, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they will mean nothing. There will be people that you used to know. I have a friend, I have friends, ne, that I've known since grade 2. And today we don't talk. I haven't seen them in years. One is even my neighbor. Haven't seen them in years. Adulthood is not like that. What you need to do is make sure that you are sorted so that you are not the person that is begging anybody for anything. So that your parents are good.
Yeah.
Shashi, no. You will see. You will see how heartbreaking. You are in Windhoek, ne?
No.
Okay. You've been to Windhoek Mos.
Yeah.
You know where the KFC is, the one in town?
Excuse me?
The KFC.
Which one?
The one in town.
Where is it in town?
Vika. Like the one close to Venue.
Oh, yeah.
You know that KFC, ne? Mm. Okay. So that KFC, there's a lighting complexion, I think he's Buster Nama guy, that stands there and begs.
Every day, or
no, every day, that's his life. He lives on the streets. Yeah. And he begs. His name is El Riku. That guy was in my class from primary school to high school.
A word?
Bruh. One of the smartest kids I know. And now he's a drug addict that lives on the streets. Yes. Life is twisted. That's why you can't laugh at other people's misfortune because you don't know what the future holds, right? But you can't also just sit down and do nothing about life because it's messed up. You try your best. And then the rest you leave it to God. Mm-hmm. There are people that I've never met ever again. Ever. I have school pictures of people that I'll never see ever again. Some are most probably dead because now I'm at the age where I have dead friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I've got so many dead friends. They're just people that I never met again. And to imagine that if I knew that I don't have to be shy of these people because I'm never going to see these people ever again, eh? Oh, I would have excelled. But now being afraid of what who is going to say and like, ah, no, guys. No. So if anybody ever says anything, you tell them, Kucha, guys, some of us are never ever going to see each other ever again after we're done with this school thing. I just want to make sure that where I land up is not in a ditch. So you guys can go ahead. Me, I'm asking questions. How?
Yeah.
No. And you almost treated me.
Yeah.
Yes. There's nobody that doesn't come out of a parent. There's nobody that doesn't, that just popped up. We are not Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all, everybody, every single person on earth has a mother. Every single person on earth has relatives. But we are not the same. So you are just doing your best so that you can understand this and then you can land somewhere. That's it. It's the landing that we are concerned about. So, yeah. Some of those people, you're never going to see them again. Like, literally, I can guarantee you that 90% of your class, you're never going to see them ever again. Some people are people that you're going to see in what? In varsity, in the corridors. And that's it. Yeah, we went to school with that guy. But you guys are not going to be friends. Like, it's not even going to be like that. You're going to get to a place where, like, nothing, nobody matters. You don't matter. You're basically invisible. So don't worry about them. You know most why you are there. Are sure? Okay. So, are we square? Are we good? Do you feel better?
Yeah, we are good.
Yeah? You feel better? I don't want you ever feel better, this child. Ah. a whole 1 hour 30 minutes dedicated to you and they, you are not feeling better. Aye. No, you feel better.
Yeah.
Is there anything else before we leave?
Nope. But that's all.
And you are...
That's all for now though.
Yeah. No, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And already, I know you are very different because you listen to radio. You're very different. There's no reason for you to try and fit in because you are not meant for that crowd. You are meant for more. You must not try and fit in with mediocre people because you are not mediocre. Yeah. And I know it's very hard because we think we're going to be here forever. We are not. We're not going to be here forever. Mvurote ipukwa and that we are our separate ways are there to sharp. Yes. Ngeshara tuazire kumambo hetu. Tukako grade 1. Ika tuition. Oof. Hey. Now all of a sudden you that comes from Nana and me that comes from Waengu, I must be concerned about you, you know. No? No? No say. Ewa. Ewa na mkwone, kondi kukwone kero?
Ewa memo, ondi kore nangai.
Nangu wikwone? That is wonderful. It starts with self-love.
Yeah.
Appreciate yourself. You're one of a kind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just don't become a narcissist.
Okay. I definitely won't.
Yeah. Okay. So enjoy the weekend. Rest. Enjoy. Yeah. Drink your cool drinks. Enjoy. And then from Monday, you get the ball rolling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dimitriak. Have a wonderful night.
Mwah. Love you. And I love you.
Yeah.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing? How are your kids doing? Because my kids are going to be graduates. My kids are fighting for their lives, my dear. We are fighting. We are fighting for our lives. We are fighting for our opportunities. We are fighting for our place in life, my dear. And that is exactly, you know, that is exactly why I do this. This is exactly why I come to work. This is exactly... Ugh, it is exactly why I'm out here.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida, ashike kapeno nweko tite okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito da njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwanda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendi finawa nokumuna oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe mbali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile kumberewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
I'm a bit of a perfectionist. Now, how many times have you heard that one? Over drinks maybe with friends or perhaps with family at Thanksgiving. It's everyone's favorite flaw. It's that now quite common response to the difficult final question at job interviews. My biggest weakness? That's my perfectionism. You see, for someone that supposedly holds us back, it's quite remarkable how many of us are quite happy to hold our hands up and say we're perfectionists. But there's an interesting and serious point, because our begrudging admiration for perfection is so pervasive that we never really stop to question that concept in its own terms. What does it say about us and our society that there is a kind of celebration, imperfection? We tend to hold perfectionism up as an insignia of worth, the emblem of the successful. Yet in my time studying perfectionism, I've seen limited evidence that perfectionists are more successful, quite the contrary. They feel discontented and dissatisfied amid a lingering sense that they're never quite perfect enough. We know from clinician case reports that perfectionism conceals a host of psychological difficulties, including things like depression, anxiety, anorexia, bulimia, and even suicide ideation. And what's more worrying is that over the last 25 years, we have seen perfectionism rise at an alarming rate. And at the same time, we are seeing more mental illness among young people than ever before. Rates of suicide in the US alone increased by 25% across the last two decades. And we're beginning to see similar trends emerge across Canada and in my home country, the United Kingdom. Now, our research is suggesting that perfectionism is rising as society is changing. And a changed society reflects a changed sense of personal identity, and with it, differences in the way in which young people interact with each other and the world around them. And there are some unique characteristics about our preeminent market-based society that include things like unrestricted choice and personal freedom. And these are characteristics that we feel are contributing to almost epidemic levels of this problem. So let me give you an example. Young people today are more preoccupied with the attainment of the perfect life and lifestyle. In terms of their image, status, and wealth, data from Pew show that young people born in the US in the late 1980s are 20% more likely to report being materially rich as among their most important life goals relative to their parents and their grandparents. Young people also borrow more heavily than did older generations, and they spend a much greater proportion of their income on image goods and status possessions. These possessions, their lives, and their lifestyles are now displayed in vivid detail on the ubiquitous social media platforms of Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. In this new visual culture, the appearance of perfection is far more important than the reality. Now, at one side of the modern landscape that we have so lavishly furnished for young people is this idea that there's a perfectible life and that there's a perfectible lifestyle, then the other is surely work. Nothing is out of reach for those that want it badly enough, or so we're told. This is the idea at the heart of the American dream. opportunity, meritocracy, the self-made person, hard work, the notion that hard work always pays off, and above all, the idea that we're captains of our own destiny. These ideas, they connect our wealth, our status, and our image with our innate personal value. But it is, of course, complete fiction. Because even if there were equality of opportunity, the idea that we are captains of our own destiny disguises a much darker reality for young people, that they are subject to an almost ongoing economic tribunal. Metrics, rankings, league tables have emerged as the yardsticks for which merit can be quantified and used to sort young people into schools, classes, and colleges. Education is the first arena where measurement is so publicly played out and where metrics are being used as a tool to improve standards and performance. And it starts young. Young people in America's big city high schools take some 112 mandatory standardized tests between pre-kindergarten and the end of 12th grade. No wonder young people report a strong need to strive, perform, and achieve at the center of modern life. They've been conditioned to define themselves in the strict and narrow terms of grades, percentiles, and league tables. This is a society that preys on their insecurities. Insecurities about how they are performing and how they are appearing to other people. This is a society that amplifies their imperfections. Every flaw, every unforeseen setback increases the need to perform more perfectly next time or else. Bluntly, you're a failure. That feeling of being flawed and deficient is especially pervasive. Just talk to young people. How should I look? How should I behave? I should look like that model. I should have as many followers as that Instagram influencer. I must do better in school. In my role as mentor to many young people, I see these lived effects of perfectionism firsthand. And one student sticks out in my mind very vividly. John, not his real name, was ambitious, hardworking, and diligent. And on the surface, he was exceptionally high achieving, often gaining first class grades for his work. Yet no matter how well John achieved, he always seemed to recast his successes as abject failures. And in meetings with me, he would talk openly about how he'd let himself and others down. John's justification was quite simple. How could he be a success when he was trying so much harder than other people just to attain the same outcomes? See, John's perfectionism, his unrelenting work ethic, was only serving to expose what he saw as his inner weakness to himself and to others. Now, cases like John's speak to the harmfulness of perfectionism as a way of being in the world. Contrary to popular belief, perfectionism is never about perfecting things or perfecting tasks. It's not about striving for excellence. John's case highlights this vividly. At its root, perfectionism is about perfecting the self, or more precisely, perfecting an imperfect self. And you can think about it like a mountain of achievement. The perfectionism leads us to imagine ourselves scaling, and we think to ourselves, once I reach that summit, then people will see I'm not flawed, and I'll be worth something. But what perfectionism doesn't tell us is that soon after reaching that summit, we will be called down again to the fresh lowlands of insecurity and shame just to try and scale that peak again. This is a cycle of self-defeat in the pursuit of unattainable perfection. The perfectionist just cannot step up, and it's why it's so difficult to treat. Now we've known for decades and decades that perfectionism contributes to a host of psychological problems, but there was never a good way to measure it. That was until the late 1980s when two Canadians, Paul Hewitt and Gordon Fleck, came along and developed a self-report measure of perfectionism. So that's right, folks, you can measure this. And it essentially captures three core elements of perfectionism. The first is self-oriented perfectionism. The irrational desire to be perfect. I strive to be as perfect as I can be. The second is socially prescribed perfectionism. The sense that the social environment is excessively demanding. I feel that others are too demanding of me. And the third is other-oriented perfectionism. The imposition of unrealistic standards on other people. If I ask somebody to do something, I expect it to be done perfectly. Now, research shows that all three elements of perfectionism are associated with compromised mental health, including things like heightened depression, heightened anxiety and suicide ideation, but by far the most problematic element of perfectionism is socially prescribed perfectionism. That sense that everyone expects me to be perfect. This element of perfectionism has a large correlation with serious mental illness. And with today's emphasis on perfection at the forefront of my mind, I was curious to see whether these elements of perfectionism were changing. To date, research in this area is focused on immediate family relations, but we wanted to look at it at a more broader level. So we took all of the data that had ever been collected in the 27 years since Paul and Gore developed that perfectionism measure, and we isolated the data from college students. This turned out to be more than 40,000 young people from American, Canadian, and British colleges, and with so much data available, we looked to see if there was a trend. And in all, it took us more than 3 years to collate all of this information, crunch the numbers, and write our report, but it was worth it because our analysis uncovered something alarming. All three elements of perfectionism have increased over time. But socially prescribed perfectionism saw the largest increase, and by far. In 1989, just 9% of young people report clinically relevant levels of socially prescribed perfectionism. Those are levels that we might typically see in clinical populations. By 2017, that figure had doubled to 18%. And by 2050, projections based on the models that we tested indicate that almost one in three young people will report clinically relevant levels of socially prescribed perfectionism. Remember, this is the element of perfectionism that has the largest correlation with serious mental illness, and that's for good reason. Socially prescribed perfectionists feel an unrelenting need to meet the expectations of other people. And even if they do meet yesterday's expectation of perfection, they then raise the bar on themselves to an even higher degree because these folks believe that the better they do, the better that they're expected to do. This breeds a profound sense of helplessness and worse, hopelessness. But is there hope? Of course there's hope. Perfectionists can and should hold on to certain things. They are typically bright, ambitious, conscientious, and hardworking. And yes, treatment is complex. But a little bit of self-compassion, going easy on ourselves when things don't go well, can turn those qualities into greater personal peace and success. And then there's what we can do as caregivers. Perfectionism develops in our formative years, and so young people are more vulnerable. Parents can help their children by supporting them unconditionally when they have tried but failed. And mom and dad can resist that understandable urge in today's highly competitive society to helicopter parent. There's a lot of anxiety that's communicated when parents take on their kids' successes and failures as their own. But ultimately, our research raises important questions about how we are structuring society and whether our society's heavy emphasis on competition, evaluation, and testing is benefiting young people. It's become commonplace for public figures to say that young people just need a little bit more resilience in the face of these new and unprecedented pressures. But I believe that is us washing our hands of the core issue. Because we have a shared responsibility to create a society and a culture in which young people need less resilience, less perfection in the first place. Let's not kid ourselves. Creating that kind of world is an enormous challenge, and for a generation of young people that live their lives in the 24/7 spotlight of metrics, league tables, and social media, perfectionism is inevitable, so long as they lack any purpose in life greater than how they are appearing or how they are performing to other people. But what can they do about it? Every time they are knocked down from that mountaintop, they see no other option but to try scaling that peak again. The ancient Greeks knew that this endless struggle up and down the same mountain is not the road to happiness. Their image of hell was a man called Sisyphus, doomed for eternity to keep rolling the same boulder up a hill, only to see it roll back down and have to start again. So long as we teach young people that there is nothing more real or meaningful in their lives than this hopeless quest for perfection, then we are going to condemn future generations to that same futility and despair. And so we're left with a question. When are we going to appreciate that there is something fundamentally inhuman about limitless perfection? No one is flawless. If you want to help our young people escape the trap of perfectionism, then we would teach them that in a chaotic world, life will often defeat us, but that's okay. Failure is not weakness. If we want to help our young people outgrow the self-defeating snare of impossible perfection, then we will raise them in a society that has outgrown that very same delusion. But most of all, if we want our young people to enjoy mental, emotional, and psychological health, then we will invite them to celebrate the joys and the beauties of imperfection as a normal and natural part of everyday living and loving. Thank you very much.
Hi everyone, my name is Isabella Fons, and when I first learned that the theme for our whole TEDx endeavor was footprints, my mind skipped straight over the whole metaphorical meaning of that and went straight to the literal one. And what I mean by that is when you run, you quite literally make footprints in the ground. Whether it's your spikes digging holes in the mud in a cross-country race, or you're simply running on the pavement and you step in a puddle and your remaining steps are marked in the ground, you make footprints. But I'll get back to that later. First, I did just want to address that although most TED Talks utilize some sort of study or research or quantitative information, I don't have any of that for you guys today. But what I do have is a story. And that's okay, because as Brené Brown has said, a story is just data with a soul. So today, I have a little bit of data with a lot of soul. So my story gets started back when I was a freshman. The summer before my first year of high school, I was a tiny little thing. I was 4'11", unlike 5 foot like I am right now, so just absolutely small. And I was just obsessed or infatuated with this goal that I had, that I was going to run at the Nike Cross Nationals Cross Country Championship in Portland, Oregon, which only 200 girls a year qualify for. Easy goal, right? And so this is a picture of me at Nationals that year. That's right, it's just the course because I wasn't there. And now that you know the end to my stellar freshman cross country season, we're gonna go back to the beginning. So little freshman me believed that a goal without a plan was a dream that's a sham. And so the way I was going to approach my extremely attainable goal was to run myself right into the ground. And run myself into the ground I did every morning that summer. I would wake up and I would picture myself at Nike Cross Nationals and I would go to practice and run as hard as I could. And maybe even go home and run some more. In fact, there was this 2.56 mile loop that we would run every Friday. And every Friday I would go home and run the remaining 0.44 miles by myself on the treadmill, because no one that ends up at Nike Cross Nationals leaves their runs at such unrounded numbers. That is just absurd. And I was conditioned to think this way and act this way through posts I saw on Instagram or draping the walls of running stores or in the podcasts that I would listen to for 2 hours on Sundays while biking, even though I was not supposed to be doing things like that. Things such as perfect, practice makes perfect, hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard, pain is temporary but victory is forever, wishes don't win races, you're not going to get the butt you want by sitting on it, and to top it all off, if you're not going to be the best at something, then don't do it at all. Hashtag Monday Motivation. We all know people that post things like this on Facebook. And at my very first cross-country race, I learned that although wishes indeed do not win races, neither does wasting all of your energy on the start line crying because you're so nervous. Needless to say, I had an awful day. I was tired, nervous, anxious, overtrained, like really overtrained, and I still felt this insane possibility that I would run at Nationals that year. And every week before my race, I would tell myself that this was going to be the day. And after every race, I would learn that it was, in fact, not my day. And every Saturday at about 10 a.m., I would look a little something like that. Definitely tears there. Yikes. And at the end of that first cross-country season, my goals of running at nationals were unfeasible. I could barely do our workouts anymore, and even that easy 2.56-mile loop, in which I would still go home and run the extra 0.44 miles by myself, was treacherous to even think about jogging. A terrible season by any explanation, all caused by this extraneous internal pressure I put on myself to be the best at something, to be perfect at something. And so the next season, I was a sophomore, I was 5 feet tall at this time, I had stopped caring if I was a good runner. I figured I had hit the bottom the year before and there would be no chance at nationals ever, which is still kind of true. But with that season, I didn't go home and run the extra 0.44 miles after running the loop. I didn't absorb the running store posters that afflicted my good judgment, and to put it quite simply, I stopped caring if I was a good runner, because why should I care if I wasn't going to be the best at something? But without all of the pressure or pursuit of perfection, I had an amazing season. Not nationals caliber, but I placed at some races, and I didn't cry before races, and I didn't start to dread Fridays unlike every other high schooler in the country because I was so nervous to race the next day. And most importantly, I had a lot of fun. My Saturdays at 10 a.m. went from looking like this to looking like this, smiling, sometimes at the medal, and I had fun after like a normal person, like you can see here with our event manager, Kirsten, though I don't really know what we were doing. My exploration from being on the pursuit of perfection to completely turning around my mentality to being kind of decent at something that I loved can all be summed up in this one quote that I found one night from John Steinbeck. And now that you don't have to be perfect, you can be good. And in hindsight, I wonder, what if that quote, "Now that you don't have to be perfect, you can be good," was draping the walls of running stores or on Instagram? Would I have gone to nationals my freshman year, or at least not cried before every race? Running in high school didn't lead me to where I thought it would. I ran away from self-inflicted stress and pressure and toward learning to love myself and celebrate myself. So, everyone in this audience knows a self-proclaimed perfectionist or is a self-proclaimed perfectionist, but what I don't think most people realize is that perfectionism is just a euphemism for a mental trap. It is evident in so many mental disorders, anxiety, OCD, eating disorders, and it is also evident in so many normal aspects of life. The adult who will work 14-hour days just to satisfy their boss but will sacrifice family dinners at the table, or the student who will get into MIT but not Stanford will feel dumb, or the author who has written 17 books but hasn't even tried to publish one due to fear of rejection, or the artist who keeps painting the same painting over and over but just gets tired and stops making art, or the playwright whose play will never come to fruition on stage because their play is never right. Okay, so now you may be wondering, how do I just stop being a perfectionist? Do I just throw in the towel or give up or aim for something lower than I know that I can do? And the answer is no. You don't do any of that. Breaking free from perfectionism isn't about being perfect at not being perfect. Breaking free from perfectionism isn't about mediocrity or ceasing to work hard. I still work really hard to be a great runner, but the difference is I'm not scared that I won't be good enough. There is this really thick gray area between being perfect and giving up. And while the gray area is a kind of awkward place to navigate through, it's really rewarding. The gray area is about recognizing little successes here and there and using that as motivation to keep going. It's about recognizing that once you recognize your little successes, it all kind of culminates into one really big success. It's about maybe failing at reaching a big goal, but still having the courage to resolve. It's about realizing that even if you're not the brightest superstar in the sky, you're still a light. It's about not burning out, not giving up. It's about finding new paths, and it's about having a little bit of fun along the way. And in the end, we don't look up to perfectionists. We don't look up to people who will degrade themselves or spend all of their time complaining as someone that we want to be, because most of the time, we don't even know that perfectionism is the cause of their anxious behavior. Instead, we look up to people who embrace themselves and their imperfections. We look up to people who are a little bit quirky or weird because that's what makes us human. And we weren't born to be perfect. We were born to be ourselves. And if you recognize yourself in my story today, I hope you can use this talk as your sign hanging up in the running store, replacing whatever old mantras or idealizations that you may have with the idea that being perfect is what's stopping you from being good. And instead of finding the perfect symbolic metaphor or ending or pun to end my talk today, I figured that just stopping here was good enough. Thank you.
I try to give all myself to you. Before I can get there, got parts of me I'm trying to lose. Yeah, I got my own imperfections. I got my own set of scars to hide. I got my own imperfections. I can't hold your heart when I'm fixing mine. So give it up, give it up. Give it up, give it up now. Give it up, give it up. I ain't gonna save you. Give it up, give it up now. 'Cause I got my own imperfections. Trying to put you on the shelf, but before I can love you, I need to learn to love myself. 'Cause I got my own imperfections. I got my own set of scars to hide. I got my own imperfections. I can't hold your heart when I'm fixing mine. So give it up, give it up. I ain't gonna say. Give it up, give it up now. Give it up, give it up. I ain't gonna save you. Give it up, give it up now. 'Cause I got my own. You are too, and I don't really want to choose. Can you love them the way that I love you? And make me who I am today, and they won't ever go away. Can you love them the way that I love you? 'Cause I got my own imperfections. I got my own imperfections. I got my own imperfections. Yeah. Trust you. I need to learn to trust myself.
right. We are ending our show this evening and we are saying goodbye, but we're saying goodbye in style, ain't it? Like every Friday. What's up?
Hey, you broke me and took your time with it.